Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Giving Flowers. I'm joined here by the King of Style, the one and only with the high grade, Eric Iberg. What's up,
King
Iberg?
Style. Yeah, man. Stoked to see you again. Stoked to get back on track with this. Stoked to fucking talk to Fuhas, tell him how dope he is today.
That's right, man. We couldn't be more blessed to have this guest on today. Join us. Made a little intro here for the people who are not familiar with this legend. Our guest today is a visionary. His wholehearted commitment on and off snow has repeatedly elevated skiing to a new plateau. His video part in session 1242 is a game changer, like checker to chess. Fact is, some even confessed it caused him to quit. His first ever pro model ski, The Fugitive, ran more numbers than The Matrix. He's a vital piece to the trinity of your favorite skier's favorite movie, Idea. He popularized no-pole skiing and broke convention at the biggest stage by competing with no-poles at X Games with Andy Mayer. There's a research team on retainer to this day searching for the footage. It's like a unicorn. His style's thorough. He moves with intent. I cannot overstate his impact on the culture. And on my behalf, we're privileged to have this man join us today.
Fuhas.
We give flowers to Kung Fuhas. Let me get him on.
Let me just say that was amazing. Every intro you do. Big up yourself on those.
Thank you. Have a lot of fun. It comes really easy just being a fan of the man. What's up?
Yeah, Foo.
What's up, boys?
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you guys.
Likewise. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for making some time for us.
You got it. How you guys living?
Awesome.
Fantastic.
You?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Did you get to just hear Phil's intro for you?
Yeah, I heard that. That was okay. A lot of words of praise. I'm appreciative.
Man, he should go into writing. He does these at the beginning of the shows if you haven't seen it, man. Like, he is awesome.
Absolutely. Some serious talent there. I almost think you should start a hip-hop band, too.
Yeah.
We might do it here with Ricky D.
We already have a hip-hop band.
We do. Not a thing. New Age Digital Artist.
Yeah, Nada for short.
Love that.
He's big baby fat and I'm Ethiopian slim. And then Henrik is homie one dread, but he cut his dread, so he's no longer in the group. I don't know. But have you seen this show before, Pep? Have you seen any of them?
I haven't. No, I just got keyed into these a couple of weeks ago when Phil kind of gave me the request, and then I talked to you about it and said I'd hold off until you guys give me some flowers, I guess.
Awesome. So the point of this is Phil and I talk about skiing a lot. Like, he's working on his stuff. I'm doing my dog and cat stuff, but we still stay in touch a bunch. And, you know, like, we're like, well, we talk about skiing a bunch. And, like, I've always wanted to do a Hall of Fame. And, like, I always kind of, like, look at it. And I'm just like, man, like, how do all these guys that created the sport, like, not really get the praise that I think they should? And especially because, I mean, we've lost out on a handful of friends now that didn't get to get celebrated when they were around on this earth. So we're like, man, let's just give fucking flowers to all these people that have done so much to bring so much to the sport, because tomorrow's not promised. And so, I don't know, you were one of the people that we had on our list where we're like, man, you've done so much for the sport, like through your skiing, through the filmmaking, through everything that you did. So we want to use this time that you're giving us, your 60 minutes, to kind of just say thank you, because it's a big deal. The reason why we can even have this, and even if it's 54 people watching, it's still people that obviously love you and love skiing because they're on Phil's thing, right? So it's a big thank you. That's the whole point of the show. And like, whether it's from me and Phil, because we've got to see what you did and have done and are doing. And then hopefully sometimes some people call in and that makes it a little randomly more fun. So Phil, I'm going to let you start, because I can go off the whole show. That's my only problem. I got so many things to say how dope you are, but I'm going to let Phil start. Otherwise I'll take over.
Yeah, I have a few questions here, and one I was wondering, because you have an unconventional path through life, and I researched a bit, did my due diligence, and saw that your parents, who were raised in a yurt in an unconventional also atmosphere. And I was wondering how your parents' tutelage shaped your intuition to follow your own path.
Yeah, they were very instrumental in kind of, I guess, like, yeah, they were very supportive in kind of anything that I chose to get into, essentially. But, you know, they let me take that choice, and they figured out how they could facilitate my passions. And my passion was certainly, I had a lot of passions growing up, mostly revolved around outdoor activities, from team sports to individual, base sports, the kayaking for a long time, skateboarding, and all these different things. That kind of happened after we moved into town. We had to move out of the yurts because they exactly were very unconventional and weren't exactly built to like code standards. So we ended up having to move out of them. But like those were pretty formative years. I grew up on about 300 acres in rural Southern Oregon. Just kind of running around and kind of choosing my adventure from day to day. But yeah, I think they just did a great job of making me realize that like the world really is your oyster, and you got to find your passion. And, you know, after you find that passion, you've got to nurture it. And, they certainly, helped me do that.
Well, that makes me say this, because I didn't even have it on my list because my list was so long and I was focused on skiing. But the first thing that I have to say about you, man, is you're a great human. And like, that's obviously praise to your parents. Like all the times I got to work with you, starting from 1242 through IDEA and then just whatever, stayed in touch. Like if I had to say one thing about you other than you made the dopest segment ever, second thing is you're an awesome human. And like to see how you've navigated. So I'm going to first start that one off by bigging you up on that, because that's harder than being a good skier, I think. And also then it's a big up to your parents, because as a mom and dad, or a dad that we both are now, like, fuck, man, I hope we can be good parents to make sure people say our kid's a good kid. So nice work, bud. Still come being a good person, knowing you.
As a father now, that's kind of one of the most important things raising a family is like, you know, academics are one thing, and if they end up focusing on those, great. But primarily, like foundationally, we want them to just be good people and be understanding of other people. I think that's a huge quality that needs to be ingrained after growing up and in those formative years. Because I think, there are a lot of parents that don't give that guidance. They're pushing for one thing or another, and like that foundational characteristic is so incredibly valuable, and that's kind of what drives it drives you as a person and drives like your friendships and your relationships. And there's so many cliches about that, like it's not what it's who and if you're not a good person, you're probably not going to know a lot of people because people don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah, or unless you have something to offer them.
Yeah.
Then you're just lost in that world. So that's another big reason why it was so important to you, and you can see it, because you got all the challenges of not being, you didn't have to be a good person, Like you went through, like everyone else, man, you're praised in 1 year. And that will get, to my first big thing of, praise for what you did with the sport with 1242, that segment, I would say still to this day, and Phil can chime in on, is the biggest produced segment for any ski movie. Like if one sticks out, we talked with Wallace last time and he has the biggest edit ever to make a bang, but yours wasn't an edit. It was after that shot, Raps called everyone. He's like, I quit. I jumped off the cliff. I didn't even want to get a shot. Cause why would I want a shot on that cliff if Fuhas did that? Your 2 5-40s each way. I don't even think I was talking with Phil, and we couldn't even figure out who landed switch the year before, in 2002. And so to go from 2002 to no one landing switch to do these fives and then do that 180 in one segment on top of all the other shit. And I didn't even get to see these shots in real life. Like, I got to shoot a good amount of your urban, I just realized when I watched that segment, you know, and then June Mountain stuff and stuff like that. But man, I just want to say, man, I'm going to say, and I think from Phil too, it is the best segment in Twin Tip history, you know, as far as like what, because it's all about the athlete. It's not about the production. Every single thing you did, I'm watching it right now just while I talk, and it's just fucking wicked, man. So if you have that as your only thing, but we got about 10 more things to talk to, you know, because you're already a good person. Now we got this segment, man. But yeah, I think everyone can still watch it to this day. And I'm going to let Phil talk as a fan, because Phil, he was only what? If this was 2003, I was 23, Phil was 13. So Phil, you can talk now, but that's a good starter for that awesome segment.
No, well said, man. To chime into this, I am still watching this to this day to get motivated and just get amped up, because from song to tricks to editing, everything merges and creates this congruency of a segment that's, to me, the holy grail, like I said, of video parts. I'm just curious, like, what fueled the motivation, especially like that year, to revolutionize the game, like literally do stuff that was never done before and never even like considered possible.
We didn't even talk about pepper rolls yet. There's a pepper roll and there's a next game second place medal in 2003 on top of this segment. So sorry to interrupt, Pep, but go on. Just more dope shit.
All good. I mean, it's a hard thing to quantify, because you don't go into a year, and I know, like, you know, if you're at a spot, particularly Phil, like, you're probably not like consciously thinking about like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, hit this rail and I'm gonna, you know, lip 270 on and like, you know, put my own secret sauce on this. Like, you get to the spot and like you're kind of fueled by the environment that you're in and like your limitations or like lack thereof. And I think, like, for me, into that season, I was just trying to progress how naturally I could progress. And you know, with that said, like, I wanted to like land backwards and see what it took to land backwards in PAL. And I, you know, practice a bunch and realize that it was a possibility. And I don't know. I remember the jump where I did, you know, those both way fives, and it was just like, you know what, I should try this. Like, I've got fives so dialed, like, there isn't anything kind of restricting me from attempting it. And you know, the first five I landed was first try. And then I think
was your first try. The first one you ever did was one landed in the movie.
Yeah. And then the second one took a couple more tries. I ragdolled a few times.
At that time, did you spin both ways?
Yeah. It was both left and right.
And was there anything else? Go ahead.
Or the left five first.
It was funny. I was actually more comfortable with the right five, just because your head is like natural. When you come around, my head is naturally facing left, which is my like dominant side for landing. You can see even when I do the left side spin that like my head is still faced in that direction. So I was just like more confident looking over that shoulder. But yeah, I think I did. I'm pretty sure I did the right five first and then the left.
Incredible. It brings me to a quote from Like a Lion that you said that I thought was very well put. And I'd like to hear you speak on it. So I'm going to quote you quick. Anybody put in a situation where they're almost instantly famous, your thoughts almost all get drowned out by everybody else's praises. I was wondering if you could share a personal experience of that, if it relates perhaps to the Session 1242 segment, and if it's thought you anything?
That's a good question.
To put it in perspective quick, that was Peppa talking about Tanner's situation. So I think it might be interesting if it's an experience that you can relate to because you had so many people in your ear.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly like, I don't know. When I was, you know, creating that particular segment, you know, I certainly didn't realize like the gravity or impact that it was going to have. And then all of a sudden, like you become famous for this one thing. And like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people would like, you get kind of stuck on that path of like, okay, well now like I'm recognized as somebody who's like really pushing the sport. How do I stay in it? And then you get really like analytical about all of the details. And like the replication, and then, you know, how do you progress on top of that? Where I felt like when I created that segment, it was fairly natural. Like all the tricks and, you know, all that stuff just kind of came to me at the time, where there wasn't like a ton of forethought, like, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do a massive 180 and I'm going to do these fives. Like, you know, set up a structure for that. Whereas kind of after that experience, like I kind of realized like, oh, you know, maybe there is a structure and I can, you know, create in that way versus like just having it come naturally. And I think I got back to that more natural style, like in idea, of just like being spontaneously creative, like planning out the creativity.
You had a gnarly one though too, because I didn't even think about it really. Like 1242 was your banger year, and then all of a sudden you get injured in the fall of next year. So after you just had that one moment that got you the pro model in two seasons, that got you like probably sponsor re-ups, all of a sudden now you're on the sidelines for a year. Man, it had to be wild with the brain. And then on top of how much fun we had that year.
Yeah. That was a funny. Yeah, it was certainly a setback, and I felt like, you know, I certainly could have probably had some more progressive stuff, but it also, I don't know, gave me a lot of time to think about my direction and where I was headed and what I wanted to do, and that's certainly why kind of idea was created. It was like, I'm good on contests, like, I want to film and have fun and, you know, get back to like the more creative side of the sport.
Well, let's go to your next awesomeness, because idea is too far ahead. One of the coolest things I think in your career was your first pro model. And like, I don't know if it was ever your idea or if it's how it was pitched to you, but you had the privilege of having a $299 pro model in the fall of 2005. And so when I saw that, like, to me, it was epic, because we were so, like, it was the year the digital video movies came out, 2004. Now, price point ski, that's half the price of everything. And then all of a sudden, you were able to benefit awesomely off it, you know. And I still, to this day, I wish, like, I saw more super pros either owning their own shit and having a cheaper ski, or just having a cheaper ski available with someone's name on it, because I haven't seen it since you. So I want to, first of all, congratulations on that. And I want to ask, do you ever know how many units you moved in your first year?
Yeah, I was right. 10,000.
How many?
Like 10,000.
Big up. I just wanted to hear that number, because I was just like, man, that's so nuts to think about. Like, to be able to, and so that's what I advise any youth. Get your name out there, because that meant Fujas was on 10,000 kids' feet. So awesome, man. Congratulations on that. And how many pro models did you get over life?
That's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that. I would say 10.
I'd guess around there too. But even that alone too, man. 10 years of pro models. Awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, so much. And the graphic design. And what caused the switch from the Fugitive name to the Kung Fu Haas?
I've always wanted to be a ninja. You know, my whole life. And I I think it was also just like a perception thing. Like the Fugitive was me like kind of rebelling against like corporate America and corporate society, and that's kind of reflected in the graphics. And then the Fugitive was kind of like fighting back and like, you know, taking more ownership. So yeah, those were like the principles and yeah, like the thought that went into those skis.
All right, Phil, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, you just pulling up all the skis. I had him pull up, but my computer is mad slow. But go ahead, Rick.
Well, that one was my favorite because it was see-through. I remember that one that you had when it hit the light and you could see through the whole base on the top sheet. I liked that one.
Yeah.
That one looked dope. What I was going to say is I want to take this time, if anyone's listening, whether we just talked about 1242 or anything, if they want to call in anytime, Phil can accept you and tell Fuas what you saw, because we had so much fun when people have called in over the last couple of people that we did. So if you guys want to say anything to Fuas, feel free to call and be part of the conversation. Otherwise, Phil and I can talk for a while.
Yeah, we ain't got enough time for the material that we got to cover, but please, people, we got someone asking Biff's trick. That you got to come with something nicer, man. Come on.
Best trick. And you can't type it out, man. You got to put your face on the screen if we do this.
But yeah, maybe we even jump to ideas, since our time is limited, and ideas like a staple and just monumental game changer. And like I said in the intro, favorite skiers, favorite ski movie. Sure is mine. What caused the switch from skiing with poles to no poles at that particular time?
I mean, there were a variety of people who were riding without poles. When I grew up, Mount Ashland, and I was always really reluctant to pick up poles. I started skiing probably around like 5 or 6. On a fairly consistent basis. Most of my friends picked up poles at like 6 or 7, and I didn't want to have anything to do with them. I think I finally picked them up around like 10 years old. And from time to time, it was always a tool that we used to help you more understand how the ski is performing beneath you, because poles like end up being a little bit of like a great learning tool, but for the most part, like, you don't really need them. And I also realized that you had more ability or like creativity and style when you didn't have a tool in your hand. And you know, that was kind of pushed by, Pollard would ride with poles from time to time, and so did Andy and Griffin Cummings, what was his name? Pete?
Mithofer. Mithofer.
Yeah, Mithofer. And yeah. One of Eric's buddies, who he used to ride with, who just kind of dropped off the face of the earth. I think his name was Pete as well, but I think those guys were some of the inspiration.
No, that was the Pete. There's two Petes. They both have a start with an M. There's the Oakley Pete from Mammoth, and then there's Pete Mithofer that I made a stereotype with that had no poles in it the whole time.
Yeah.
That's the guy that disappeared.
Yeah, so I started skiing without poles. I realized you have so much more ability for, like, creativity, and they don't get in your way, and I don't know. I just love the feeling. So yeah, that was the no pulse era.
Yeah, it lasted pretty short. Hey, what caused you to put them back on? Was it like riding more steep terrain and just going into gnarlier zones?
Yeah, I think there is certainly that component. I don't know. I think I was just kind of like transitioning back into like more of a you know, I had more like big mountain objectives on my mind, I guess. And, you know, after riding a lot without poles, like, get poles back, and you also realize, like, if you can control poles, that adds like another element of complexity. So there's like, there's two sides. Like, it, you know, can you do something awesome with poles in your hand that looks really nice and clean, and there's like that extra complexity component, or there's like riding without poles, everything simplified. Yeah, I guess those are the two sides.
So I didn't have ski dreams. Maybe from 2000 on, previous, I could do as many daffies as I wanted, like land uphill, all the dope shit, you know? But making idea, it was the first time I had ski dreams again, and my dreams were about switch turning with no poles and then grabbing snow and then looking at my hand while I was going backwards and just being stoked. And I'll remember that because, I mean, when you ski dream a lot and then you just stop, it's almost like when you, I don't know, when you quit smoking weed and then you start dreaming. It's like vice versa. You don't have ski dreams, then the fucking ski dream came back. So that was pretty wicked to think about, because no movie ever made me think I could, like, cork and flip and do any trick, and I've seen it all, but a switch turn with no poles, man, made me dream. It was epic.
Nice. I think Greta just asked, like, what were your all first ski segments? I think my first ski segment was Scandalous.
Yeah, okay. He wouldn't let me put that online. Otherwise, we would have posted the segment. I don't have a VHS anymore for the purple tape.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. That was with Dave Levin. He was living in Mammoth, and we became friends. He wanted to put a movie together. Those were wild times.
So when you were so Scandalous, that's 2001. Was it the spring of Scandalous when you got like seen by Oakley and K2, and then you got picked up by both of them in that time?
Yeah, exactly. I got picked up by Oakley prior to that. I'd like kind of snuck my way into Parkasaurus, the Freeze magazine event, down in Southern California. And
that's still when you had the vocal with the yellow V on it or whatever.
Yeah.
Was that the last? Yeah.
Yep. And Tanner was like, oh, you should come up. It was like, I was right before, I guess it was piggybacking my like spring break and my last year of high school. Like, oh, you should just come up to Mammoth for spring break. And during that time, Oakley was doing a shoot up there with JP and Ford and that crew, and yeah, just riding the park, and I think Chris O'Connell was like, hey Greg, like you should ask it if he wants to shoot some. I shot some, and like by the end of the day, Greg was like, hey, you know, we'd really like to you know, get you on board, and what would you think about that? And I was like, oh yeah, are you kidding me? I gotta.
So this is when you're a mogul skier still in Steamboat.
What's that?
You got this deal when you were still a mogul skier.
Yeah.
To be a freestyle skier or whatever you want to call it. That's awesome, man. That alone, too, is cool. So what do you do? Do you go back and then quit right away?
I mean, that senior year of high school, like, I was competitively skiing moguls, but I was kind of burnt out on it. And I was kind of using every, like, go ride the park and... yeah, like, you know, make some twin tips and, yeah, try to, like, I don't know, figure out some tricks. And, so yeah, pretty much right after that, it was like, all right, well, I've kind of solidified my plan for the next year. I'm going to take at least a year off and, go move to Mammoth and see where it takes me.
Yeah. Well, nice decision there. Took you to hang out with Levin for two straight seasons. Fuck yeah, Levin. I hope you're watching. I doubt you are.
Another ski nerd trick to talk about. I think maybe Mike Nick or Yannick B or both were there at Sunday River. Maybe you might correct me if I'm wrong, but for this right side 180, and just ginormous to flat, powerful, just thorough style. Can you talk about that segment and that trick in Happy Days, that is?
Sure, yeah. We were out there for a shoot, and they had set up some rails and some other stuff in their park, and I like wasn't really jiving with it. And we found this feature, and I was like, oh, this is rad. This could like kind of showcase kind of the next movement, because you know at that time there were a lot of like kind of ride on rails, and I was kind of influenced by skate and skate. You like pop off the tails, and initially I really wanted it shot like from behind so you could see like the ollie up and over the rail, but yeah, spotted that and was like, oh, this feature is pretty epic, and let's shoot it and see what happens. And did that one, and the landing was super flat. Decided that was good enough for me.
Well, it's nice you landed it your first try. That would have been a bummer if it was super flat and you crashed and had to do it a second time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, before you spoke of it, I was thinking that shit is so skateboard influenced. It's no wonder that you were influenced by skate so much. We're going to keep going on the ski nerd shit because that's what I am. And go to the pep roll, man.
Yeah, we've been talking about this all morning.
Trick that you invented and coined. Can you talk how you managed to figure this one out?
Honestly, it was pretty like haphazard. Everybody was doing like switch rodeos at that time, and that was actually my attempt at a switch rodeo, and it was totally kind of it was on accident. And then I just went with it. It was like, people are just like, what the hell was that? And how did you land that? And I was like, I don't know, but I'll do it again.
When's the last time you've done one?
I think it was, it's probably been like 4 years, but I'll do it again. It's a fun trick.
Dude, it's so wicked. Like when we just watched it on repeat this morning, because the gnarliest thing about this trick is, when people can stop, rewind in slow motion for 20 years and no one else does it. Cause I was like, Phil, who else does this rotation? He's like, I don't know. And I tried to go through it. So no one even, it would stick out, but I don't know. Maybe you know of someone that does it, but I've never seen it.
I feel like I've seen Henrik do.
I thought so too. That's why I asked Phil, because it would stick out in our brains. I'm sure Henrik will correct us if we're wrong. And he probably copied
yeah,
you
Henrik
off
it. All. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Henrik does study you.
The way that this one was done previously that I shown to seven, I haven't seen anybody do it like that. This one to nine too is ridiculous.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I think that's pretty much the dopest thing when people can't really copy, and if we're even having a hard time thinking of one person. Like your whole point, you know, like every person had that switch rodeo seven tail that year in the movie, right? And so yeah. It's just like funny, like who remember it? The only person that's remembered off it is Tanner winning every event in 2001 with the switch rodeo seven, you know, but that's it. Other than that, everyone else just did it. Boyd's was sick. Fucking everyone's was sick. But yeah, pick up yourself on fucking creating shit, not following.
So much of keeping a relevancy and also upgrading your repertoire for two decades. And one thing, you were invited at the first or maybe second Rail Ski Backcountry and have some clips in there that to this day I've never seen anything alike it. A 180 to start the show is a 180 into a line and then switch carve into a switch cliff drop. That must have been on your mind for a while, I feel like, to attempt this type of trick. So sick. Can you talk about this one?
Yeah. Oh, actually, that was kind of, I mean, I got that idea essentially from Andy. Andy had done, like, he did switch in 180 off a cliff. I don't remember which movie it was in.
Is that Poor Boy? Poor Boy. I don't know. He did a switch in and forward on our sideways pillows and idea, but he had a bigger one in the year before in Poor Boy's movie, I think, from Straight On.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I did have this one on my mind for a little while, and I just wanted to find the place for it to happen. And we were up in BC, and you can see that it's like fairly mediocre conditions, like scoured, but that actually worked in my favor because you can control yourself really well. And yeah, it was something I thought about, and then like the right opportunity presented itself. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, I didn't even see that before this morning, Fuas. That one's not normal. Like, I didn't realize, because, yeah, at that time, I just thought, did you place even at that time? I know Sammy won, but.
No, that was a weird event, because they were like, oh, we don't want ski lines, we just want tricks, and then, like, a lot of people put in some ski lines. I was just, like, working on hitting jumps. But yeah, that was fun. I don't think I placed.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Well, that line is dope as fuck.
Yeah, and also this forward 1080, was that the first time you were doing a forward 10 like that with a reverse tail?
Yeah, that was my first 10, I think, ever. Well, not, I guess I can't say that. I did some like pencil 10s and stuff like that, and Moog, but... Yeah, that was the first tail 10.
Your first 10 ever was in 2013?
I mean, in a movie, for sure.
Awesome. That's a big thing, too, if you can rotate under 10 fucking for a decade of a career.
Yeah.
No, I think Dash Long's the only one that can outdo you. He's at 540 for fucking, or 720 for about 20 years.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah.
What about your snowboarding background? When did you start snowboarding? Because an idea, you guys made a segment, the snowboard segment, and it's pretty damn cool, like much better than I could ever snowboard. When did you start picking up the snowboard?
I started snowboarding when I was pretty young. I was probably like 10 or 11, and I mean, snowboarding was just kind of starting at that time, and I had some friends, and we'd like, you know, strap our ski boots into the bindings and go like hard boot snowboarding every once in a while. And then when I was like either 12 or 13, completely switched over to snowboarding for a season, but then just realized like I just loved I loved the dynamics of skiing a bit more. Like I don't know. I just decided I'd go back, and kind of snowboard from time to time here and there. And let's see, one summer I was dating a snowboarder, and we were down in New Zealand, and I pretty much like stopped skiing for summertime session at snow park and was just snowboarding. I was just so psyched on the feeling of it. I hadn't really hit any big jumps, all the big jumps in the park and dialing in fives and sevens, and I'm just having a lot of fun. I've like kind of dabbled in snowboarding over the years and really enjoy the contrast between the two sports. The same medium, but like totally different feel.
And Iceberg, a question for you. What was the thought process behind making it a full segment or like a short interlude in a movie?
Well, so it was broken up into Oregon, Washington, and Utah. And I guess it was because Pep and Andy were from, or Pep and Eric were from Oregon, but Pep lived in Utah, Andy was from Washington. So we had three segments, and then we needed like three interlude segments. So we had a snowboarding one, We had what were the other two? That was it was or one other one between it was something sporadic because it was snowboarding.
Oh, you guys driving some go-karts in the mud.
No, that's all Alaska. Okay, Alaska got an interlude segment. So Alaska and snowboarding were the two interludes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the whole point of breaking that up.
Yeah, I think for the inclusion of it, it was like we all enjoyed snowboarding and we thought it would be fun to, like, I don't know, shoot a couple days and see what happened, and if, you know, something kind of fun came out of it, then we'd include it in the movie.
And we did it. I mean, even Andy got that awesome shot with the mini board laying on the ground doing a method in the cloud. So everyone got shots. And we had a dope ass song, if I remember. It was like some weird synthesizer, and even the song was fun. So just mixed it up, made fun. I want to know, Pep, just because we're on tricks and Phil likes this shit, what's the gnarliest urban feature you ever did? Like it that had consequences for you or you thought was the craziest one on all the shit you've ever done? You don't have one that sticks out in your head that you're like, fuck that feature?
No, I mean, like my urban skiing was pretty limited.
That must have been pretty gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's nice call, Phil.
Yeah. I'm going to bring that memory back. I totally forgot about that. I did that on Seth Pistols, which was
true. I forgot too. But that's why I even asked the question, because I filmed pretty much all your urban in Utah, you know, so that was maybe the majority of your career. But at the same time, you're with a guy who did maybe a million urbans. So you were still doing everything just like this. You're beside what, Anthony doing this? NJP?
Yeah.
So you have Anthony being like, fuck yeah, guys, you want to lose a tooth? And you're like, I got this.
Dude, I think, I don't know if it was Anthony or JP, but one of them tried to hit it switch.
Or Chuan, maybe?
Super gnar.
Really? Jesus.
And they, you guys had like a carpet on the roof, if I remember, or something that would grip your skis before dropping. And then you'd get, yeah, it was fucked up, the whole thing. So nice call, man. That is your gnarliest thing because someone crashed hard on it.
Yeah, I mean, I crashed hard on it, but I think Anthony crashed harder for sure.
Hey, if Travis Erdman is watching, you've texted me, you've written a lot on the bottom, just call in, man. Ask that question. I don't know what it means at all. Yeah, but I'd love to see your face.
One more clip before we get, maybe it seems like Greta's on and she's like got some good questions. I just want to jump into.
Greta, you should just call in and then you can ask him. That's why we're doing this. You here.
This clip is absolute madness. Just the top tier bar of backcountry skiing to me. Gnarly, fast, precise. What's going through your mind before you hit that? Like,
I better get through these trees. it was a deep day. Tanner brought me out to that spot. I'd just driven up from Utah the night before. I got in, I think, at like 2 a.m. or something. Maybe got to bed by 3. We were up at like 5:30 to go to this spot because the conditions were pretty good, but kind of sketchy. It had snowed a lot, so all the alpine was kind of off limits. But he had this little zone picked out and hit the line that he rode was super gnarly as well. It's over to the left of Looker's left of where this one is. And we were scoping out this zone and I saw that line and he was like, oh yeah, I've been looking at that line. And like, you know, you just got to point it. Like, yeah, that's the deal. I can remember like the whole setup, like waiting for him to ride his line. He rode his line and nailed it. See Jakob Wester there and like his film crew, they were just all like, you know, up in arms, like excited about the line that he had just skied. And so, of course, like, my nerves were going, and I was just, you know, looking from the top. It's kind of, it's a little bit convoluted, and you can't exactly see where you need to go besides the takeoff. And the takeoff was, he is a bit flat. I was like, oh, I'm a little nervous. Like, am I going to get hung up, like, right at the end? That was just all about, like, yeah, harnessing as much speed as possible and trying to, like, pump where you can. And, I don't know, almost, like, stay off out of the deep snow as much as possible.
Moo.
Yeah, what up, Greta?
Moo is here.
Hey, guys. Oh, my gosh. I was so nervous. This is crazy. I'm, like, flushing.
You're like an internet girl, though. This is normal.
I was like, if internet girl doesn't log in, this is going to be bad. GoPro hot mom right here. But I have a serious question. I wrote it in the comments. But I want to know, Pep, because, you know, I'm big Cottonwood Canyon. Love snowboarding. Lots of my friends are snowboarders. My brother's a snowboarder. I try to snowboard, but I'm just not that good at it. I need to put more time into it. But what is your stance on skiing only at Elta?
She's coming in swinging. This isn't flowers. This is like politics. It's awesome.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, I like snowboarding as well, and I, you know, I have friends who are snowboarders, and it's pretty lame that they can't ride up the lifts. I do not like that aspect at all. I don't like the exclusivity of it. You know, there are plenty of arguments that you could take that is not set up for snowboarders because of there's so many traverses, and it would create like a lot of jam up. Like, there are like set lines that you kind of have to take, and it's already like super jammed up in those spots.
Can we pick on Deer Valley, man? The corduroy there is dope. Like, no one ever hates on Deer Valley. Like, it's always Alta. Fuck, Deer Valley. They have a Regency. You can do yoga, hot chocolate on the hill. That's what's bullshit.
I agree.
What we're doing Deer now. Valley. Fuck Deer Valley.
And they're both on National Forest. I mean, I think it's so silly. What do we have to do? I know a lot of the young skiers, Pep, look up to you, and they're, like, still holding the flame of, like, oh yeah, let's keep this place skiing only. And it's just like, it's so weird. It's like, they don't get it. They don't get it. And it's like, let's open this to everyone. Number one, it's not even our land. It's Ute's land, right? It's indigenous land. And we took it. And now we're saying, no, skiing's white people only. Just, yeah.
You know what Pep can do? Pep can make a snowboard out of LG for them. That's what he can do. And it's fucking awesome.
But let us know. Yeah, let me know what I can do. If there's like emails, if I'm like, just let's get this going, because I mean, it's crazy. It's 2022.
I mean, you can certainly like get together petitions and all that. Like, they've gotten, you know, gone to court, I think, 3 or 4 times and have won every single time.
I think we got to get like an Elta, like, skier like crew to say, hey, let's change this.
Yeah,
you know, I've never seen that. I haven't seen that push yet.
Yeah, true. I think it's a hard line because there are so many skiers that, myself included, like, I love skiing Alta. It's really awesome for my family. Like, it just like has the layout that works for like raising kids and But I think it's like the double-edged sword. A lot of skiers, particularly those who are professional or aspiring professionals, like, they don't necessarily want to burn the bridge.
What's the guy, Elf Engen from Norway? He's like started the skiing up there or something.
You're Norwegian.
I know. That's what I'm like. Yeah. I think it was this like old school thought that came in. And I think, Pep, I think you have a voice. And I think if you said, hey, let's start snowboarding here too, I think it would change a lot. I mean, it's just crazy to me. It's just crazy.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
That's why I stay in big. Because, you know, Brighton and Solitude, everybody's welcome. You can snow bike, you can snowboard, you can ski, whatever sport you want
to do. Where are you right now?
Minnesota.
You're not even there. Utah represent. Fuhas is there. He cares about the people. It's like the president going to another country when bad times are bad. There's you in Minnesota, all snowboarders in Utah. They can't leave Utah. I'm just making fun. I'm in Minnesota. I'm not trying to get a snowboard just to go anywhere. They got a million places. Give thanks for the privilege of sliding.
I've got one more Utah question. Like, because back in the day, I remember before I moved to Utah, there was tons of like backcountry terrain. You know, ski touring wasn't as big, you know, there's a lot of blank canvases out there, lots of snow. And now it's so much harder to find that kind of terrain, like that backcountry stuff. Like, do you think ski movies are kind of changing where it's okay to have some like tracks and stuff? It doesn't really matter as long as people are getting out there. Like, how do you go out and do your tricks in the backcountry, but like live in Utah where there's 700,000 people that just moved there last year and still like find free space?
Oh, I mean, there are so many spots that you can get away from people, and gosh, it's wild. It's pretty tight range, but like you go off the beaten path and you know your spots, like there's always places to go. I mean, personally, I'm not all that concerned with tracks. I think people pay so much pay so much attention to like, well, this has to be clean. Put on this like facade of what it actually is, and a lot of times, like after your first hit, like that's when you know there's an in run for your jump. Like it's nice and clean, and you can actually do something. Like you have more motivation, like do a trick off whatever it is. So yeah, I'm not all that concerned. I mean, in some respects, it's like it's gnarlier if there are tracks.
Totally. Yeah. That's cool. That's what I wanted to hear. I think so too. I think there's space for everyone, and that's why I just brought the Elta thing up, because I think everyone should be able to try it. And I love Elta too. And honestly, I married a snowboarder, so that's why like a lot of my best friends are snowboarders. So I just like there was no reason for me to leave. You know, and, I don't know.
You wouldn't be a ride or die if you went to Elta without him.
I would not.
No. Bad look.
Yeah.
One
last question, though. I got the chance to work with the University of Utah freeride team last year, which was awesome. And it was both ski and snowboard. Over 120 participants. And they're just so amazing. Like, I just love this new generation coming up. And they really look up to, like, our era of skiing. You know, I would say Pep and Eric in my era. Phil, you're a little later, but you're still there. And they loved how like creative it was and how like unique and kind of free. How they just want to know, like, should they just keep sticking with it, what they want to do, like make their films, do the things, and just it'll work out? Because they don't want to do the competition, you know, the Olympics and whatnot. They don't want to do that. They want to do the era where it was about fun, making things up, you know, that sort of thing. Any advice for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think follow your path. If you have a creative idea of like how to present what you're trying to display to the world, and like lots of companies out there that need their help, essentially, like they need content creators, they need people who are out there every day pushing the sport whatever direction. Like if it's the direction of you know, going out and being creative in whatever environment they're in, like, there's certainly an app for that. And I would say just, like, get yourself out there, get out there and meet people, introduce yourself to brands.
Awesome. Yeah, I think they just have to stick with it. The passion's there. Everything else follows. I agree. Well, thank you guys. I'll go off so you can ask someone else the questions, but thank you.
Yeah, move.
Thanks, Greta.
Now I can go like, go your die.
Go die. Go enjoy some water skiing or something.
Right?
Of course. Yes. It's pretty nice here. But both. It's good to have both. Lake and for me, I just need to be by water. Water and snow or water. I need it.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Right,
good
guys. To see you, Greta. This is awesome.
Thanks, Greta.
Peace.
Pep, would you have one more person's question? Time for one more person's question?
Yeah, absolutely. I might probably extend this for another 10, 15, too.
Yes.
Let's see if he jumps on, but I got Crazy Carl on the chat.
Hell yeah.
Hopefully he accepts this. Maybe he just got it on his phone on the side. But Carl, if you hear this, we're trying to get you on.
Crazy. Carl, there he is.
Yes, sir.
Boom.
What up? Thanks for
the invite, man.
Love hearing all the history and just kind of getting into Prep's brain back in the heyday, man.
Hell yeah. Great that you call it, man.
Following my idea inspirations. Got the editing studio.
Ooh.
Made a birth productions, Rap Ski 2 coming together.
Hell yeah.
Rap, rap.
Yeah.
Good book, man. You got something for Carl?
Go ahead.
No, you go, man. You got a question for the man here?
Yeah, I just want to know how good it felt capping that 5 blunt at the hood parking lot step down.
Oh, it was unreal. That was I was definitely one of the best feelings I've ever had in skiing. I was able to hold it all the way to the end. I just learned that trick. I think a couple of weeks prior up in Park City when we were shooting for the film as well. But yeah, that was the best feeling ever for sure. Landing at the bottom of the canny, it's like, wow, that just happened.
Perfectly. We'll just watch it. Phil is great on the technical element of this show.
That was funny. You just I almost got the same amount of adrenaline just kind of revisiting that whole experience in my mind.
You want to know a fun thing too? In 2012, Henrik did the same location and he did the double backflip tail kind of like you. And then you won trick of the year in 2007 and then he won a trick of the year just by adding a flip. But he just copied your shit, added a flip, held the grab the whole time. It was fucking awesome.
So, he's a good one-upsmanshipper.
Well, he's a studier, man. It's like if you go to school, you want to be better than your professor and not be a professor, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he is a ski scientist.
What skis were on that clip? Was that the Fujas?
No, that's the Hellbent.
That's Hellbent work.
Yeah, good one, Carl. That definitely is one of the deserving of a best trick of the year. And still to this day, going that big, capping blunt, and just flawless in and out is just unreal, man. And yeah, Henrik did. Iberg was there on that session, and Henrik did shout you out. Maybe not personally in real life, but he did say that. Maybe I'm going to just do the pep roll, but I don't think he said he was going to do it twice. That was a surprise for all of us.
Hooray. Yeah, you guys are awesome. You too, Carl, man. Now that you're on the phone, just big up yourself and all that you do. I've never talked to you in life, but I watch all your shit, man. It's wicked.
Yeah, and we need to play some Kings again one of these days.
What's that?
We need to play some Kings again one of these days. That ping pong game we were playing at T's house back in
We do. I forgot. That game was awesome. I forgot all about this game. All right. I'm going to get a ping pong table at Walmart when the family gets back. Teach them Kings.
Yeah, you're a tough one to beat with those long arms and those long legs, man, taking over the whole table and around.
Yeah, you can jump over the table if someone goes for the opposite corner on your runaround. It's good to go. Ping pong, man. Fujas, we bought lots of ping pong tables that year. I think we bought three total.
Yep, I got a K2 question for you. You keep a bunch of your old skis around. You have an old pair of Hellbents and a bunch of your pro model stuff. You just keep that in your job. Are you a little bit of a pack rat when it comes to stuff like that? Or
I am, yeah. Yeah, my wife's chagrin a bit. I have one pro model from every year. And I did have a little bit of foresight. And I kept some prototype prototype Hellbents and the like the rockered AK Maiden. The AK Maiden, you rockered that, and that was like the precursor to the Hellbent. And that's like one of the sickest graphics ever.
Those belong in a museum, man.
I've got the original Hellbent as well. Variety of a pretty wide variety. I think when I moved houses probably 5 years ago, I you know, cleaned it out and I had like 70 pairs of keys. That was pretty ridiculous. I've pared it down quite a bit. But yeah, I've got a pretty good archive.
I still got your 165 first year's autograph by you unmounted, meaning to be shipped in my garage for 3 years. They're sitting right by my car. But I got those are fresh in the wrapper still, man.
Nice.
I probably could sell them on eBay, but it's probably doper if your kid gets to ski on it when they're a little bigger.
Yeah, all of my wrappers have like disintegrated pretty much.
That ski was sick. Did Shmee's do that art?
Yeah, Shmee's actually did our artwork this year for Wonder Alpine.
He's on fire, man. And he's got a J ski.
Yeah.
Big up Shmee's. Wisconsin represent. Well, shit. Well, do you have anything else, Carl? Because we have limited time. We got a couple of things we still got to check off. But if you got more shit or anything you want to say.
Just another shout out to Shmee's who did our graphic last year.
Brat Boss.
Super hyped on that. Part two on the K2 question. You got a pair of Hellbents that I could borrow for a couple days at some point this winter.
I might. I think most of mine are unmounted still, so it would be tough to get those mounted up. But at the same time,
like, holes in them either.
They need to get speed, and you're definitely a guy that I would respect having some of those.
Thanks, bro.
No doubt.
Well, good catch.
Thanks for joining us, Carl.
Keep it up, Casabon. Love this series, dude. Been trying to tune in every chance I can.
Wicked.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, man. Thanks for chiming in. And mad love on what you're doing out there, dude. Such an inspiration.
Appreciate it. Step at a time.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
This is a little under wraps, but just want to throw it out there. I want to get an AK ski event going, and I want to call it the AK sessions. It'd be kind of Kimmo sessions focused style, just clips dropped every day, recap edits, and try to do some like not live from the field, but close to live from the field, and just get more people with Casabon style, Pep style, just bringing tricks into the mountains. And start up an AK sessions sort of deal eventually. Figure out how to get branding to, you know, make it so the athletes can get free heli time, and we'll see. I got a couple irons in the fire, so both you guys in the loop if it ever comes together.
Fuck yeah. Sounds like a rad vision.
Yeah, man, make it happen.
Bitches. Would love it.
That's funny. I totally this is totally by coincidence, but I'm wearing one of the old Nimbus shirts.
Hell yeah, you are.
Yes.
I've never even seen that one.
Dude, love it. We need some Nimbus reruns on the t-shirt, and I would buy one of those.
No doubt. Well, we should host a showing sometime. I'll bug Pollard about that.
All right, see you guys.
Right, man. Have a good day. So let's continue on Nimbus now because time is almost limited. So another big thing, Fuhas, is pretty much your big part that you played was like you got so involved in Movies After Idea and then being involved in Nimbus and like just kind of putting your vision on the industry out there. And so I just want to big up you on that because when you don't take the easy way out, because you could have easily went with any production company and then got fed or whatever, but I'm sure you invested a good amount of time and money in the Nimbus years. So that's a big deal, man, because that's what no one really gets and understands when athletes make movies. Like, I mean, I can only imagine how much money Eric put into making movies in life. I'm going to guess you're somewhere not close, but it doesn't have to be close. That's his life. But big up yourself on that, man, because it was a pleasure to watch all the Nimbus movies. I was so stoked you guys kept making movies. And then even now, like, you get to work with Sturbins, and Sturbin made team movies forever. So you got two guys that make content. Is that Sturbinator X?
Yeah, there's Sturbins right over there.
Hell yeah. Damn. We're going to be talking to him one day, too.
Nice.
So that's what I'm
like.
Likewise.
I mean, you guys know the game pretty well, and like, you've made tons of movies. It's not an easy thing to do.
So, no. Yeah. And to be an athlete and do it is pretty epic. And especially in a time period where you didn't have to make a sponsor me video every year. It was more of a commitment to show your art. Now people make a movie on themselves for the last 10 years, and it's like the most expensive sponsor me movies I ever fucking watched. And I'm like, can I see a movie with some more people, please? But that's just a fan over here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's pretty awesome to watch what you guys have done and did.
Thank you.
Wicked, man. Want to be mindful of your time, Pep. So we're going to let you go, but I just want to give you the opportunity to give some flowers if you'd like to. Anybody you'd like to give some flowers to before we bring this to an end?
Wow. Man, there are a lot of people to give flowers to. You guys in particular, yeah, thanks for having me on. Eric, thanks for your contribution to the sport. Like being really creative in a time that seemed very stagnant. I think that was huge, huge part. And just rallying the troops, dude. You were seriously good at getting people hyped. You're like the ultimate hype man.
Still working on it, buddy. That's why I got Phil to have a show on his Instagram page.
Yeah, that's sick. And thank you, Phil. Like, you're a true inspiration to myself and I'm sure the whole community at large. You've had a great presence. And yeah, it's always fun to watch you get creative because you've got a creative mind like no other. But through the years, like, love to give some flowers to Johnny D. A lot of the other guys who are making movies. Tanner, Henrik, the list could go on forever, I think, but I appreciate what you're doing here, and we'll certainly be tuning in to watch more.
Hell yeah, man. Thanks for talking with us and stoked, because if we can do this with all the, like, we made a list of how many people we can talk to and then, like, what their contributions are to the sport. It's so wicked, because it's just, like, there's no other outlets, and I'm like, man, no one's giving anyone pedestals anymore to tell their story, or not only tell their story, but just, like, be thankful. Because so many things wouldn't happen without you being involved in the sport, or Falou, or Wallace, or whoever we talk with. And so I think it's a super big deal that, like, we congratulate you, we celebrate you, we thank you. And that's it, man. That's the whole point of the last hour. So thanks for being on here.
You're welcome.
Yeah, man.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy yourselves.
Congrats. We haven't touched on it, but congrats on Wonder and starting an enterprise of your own with Sturbins. You guys are a real inspiration for it. And just plug your maybe social media and where people can find you before you leave, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's all of my socials, pretty simple. Pep Bugis Instagram, Facebook. Go to wonderalpine.com and check out what we're doing and bringing bio-based materials to the ski world and beyond.
Yep, another awesome thing we didn't even get to talk about. But
yeah, maybe going, some other man. Time.
Hell yeah.
True. All the best, brother.
Yeah, take care.
Yeah. Cheers, guys.
And peace.
See ya.
Boom. Fuck yeah. That was a good one. That was a really good one. That's good. Now we're going. We got to do this every weekend. So we're back. We just had to take a little summer break. But, so we're going to be back next week, 12:30. Thank you, Fuhas. Do we have a confirmation next week?
We don't have full confirmation, but the guest we are presenting next week is going to blow you off. He's the first of his kind to be on the show. So tune in And otherwise, we're going to have someone awesome. Everybody's been just iconic that's been on. And that's what we try to celebrate is those people that have gave skiing flowers. And so we want to give them back.
Yeah, man. So give thanks to all the people that have been on the show, all the people we want. And that's, yeah, it's just the most important thing. You know, we just got to be thankful from where we came from. And if you know where we came from as well, maybe someone learned something today. And then you kind of know where you're going a little more. So we all stoked, man. And we get to talk to cool people every week. So thanks, Greta, for calling in. Thanks, Crazy Carl, for calling in. That's the goal. We'll have more people call in throughout the next shows. We'll get a bunch of people and go from there.
Well said, man. Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, man. Thanks to everyone tuning in. Us. Peace.
Peace.